welcome to the Mad Trio Podcast. This week we have the California Pariah, Jonathan Charney, James the Fat Man Stevens.
Hello.
And the man who can be his own grandfather, Ryan Preston.
Wasn't that a Tom Arnold bit?
Yeah.
It's a number
I think he was. I think he did a song called I'm My Own Grandpa. Yeah. I remember from when I was a kid.
So this...
Remember when Tom Arnold was funny?
No.
No, actually.
Come on, True Lies, get the fuck out of here.
No, that was called good writing. There's a difference between being writing and being funny, you know, acting and being funny.
Yeah, well, he did a lot of, you know, he had some good sketch shit. He did that damn sports show where he was fucking great on.
It's because everybody shit on him the whole show.
But he was just his knowledge of sports.
Every time I watched it, everybody was shitting on him the entire time. It was more or less, he was the comic foil.
Well, large. He basically is a comic foil. If not for his own personal proclivities, you know, the whole Roseanne situation, you know, being the sort of, you know, house husband, so to speak, to the powerhouse that was Roseanne back in the 90s.
He's the less funny Artie Lang of comedy.
So I actually had to look this up because there was a funny movie that I remember him in, and the only really funny part of it with him in it is at the end. If you watch the credits, Tom Arnold and Anthony Anderson sit down in Cradle to the Grave and just have random conversations at the end of that movie. And that's like the only part where I've ever seen Tom Arnold where I'm laughing, because they're sitting there and what they start talking about is how they keep streak marks out of their underwear. And one of them was talking about dipping toilet paper in water and wiping his butt. The other one was talking about using baby wipes and all this crap. And it was just like some random conversation that they decided to throw at the end of the movie. And that was like the only part of that thing where I ever thought, like, actually, that was a pretty funny bit. But
that's gross. That's just like the scene from Trains, Planes, and Automobiles.
But, you know, that him saying, have you ever found Tom Arnold funny? That's about the only part of Tom Arnold's career that I actually found funny.
And talk about a stink you can never get rid of.
You're going to talk about Roseanne?
No. Oh, okay. So here's the headline. This is the register.co.uk. Get the smell out of here. Gaming tournaments ban players who raise a literal stink. By the way, the register.co.uk usually has amazing headlines. They're usually pretty funny. Yu-Gi-Oh! Takes a brave stance on requesting basic hygiene for competitors. The latest edition of the tournament rules for the anime-based trading card game includes a new subsection addressing basic hygiene as part of the guidelines. You are expected to be clean when you enter the tournament. Neglecting to wash or put on clean clothes contributes to an unpleasant atmosphere at the event, as the tournament can be crowded and the day can be long. Persons who neglect self-care to the point that they are negatively impacting tournament may be asked to correct the issue in order to continue to the event. In other words, reek of ass, you shall not pass.
Shit, fuck that, man. That's my version of psychological warfare. You know what I mean?
That's like, I'm just sitting there and I'm like thinking, like, there has to be a lot of nasty-ass people for it to need to have hygiene standards. I mean...
So here's somebody's tweet. Konami has made it against the rules to be stinky at events. A judge can deem you too smelly to complete, and I think the Smash scene could use this as well. I think this is hilarious. The fact that, you know, the typical, and the article says this, you know, the typical nerdy thing about the smelly dude who lives in his parents' basement now has to be the fairly pleasant-smelling dude who lives in the parents' basement. On the other hand, if this is in France, from my experience, the French aren't known to be the greatest smelling people, so maybe they just need more perfume. Maybe it's going to smell like the perfume section at Macy's.
You know who I would expect to have this type of standard?
What?
Poker tournaments.
I've never been in a poker tournament.
You know,
yeah, there's some dirty fucking people that play poker.
There are some... Yeah, I've watched some poker tournaments over the years, and when they do some of those outside tables, you look at some people and you're like, God damn, I'm glad I'm not sitting next to him.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, I've played with some real fucking scumbags at these little casinos and whatnot. And you're like, wow,
so,
man.
So do you think Mike the Mouth Matisau was a really stinky guy? Is that the reason why everybody picks on him?
He probably had Binaka so he didn't get his ass beat at the end of the tournaments, okay? Because, I mean, if he doesn't shut, if he runs his mouth the way that he usually does, he, I mean, that place got a reek. You know, I mean.
So if you don't, I don't know if he plays anymore, but there was a high stakes game with him and Daniel Negreanu, and Daniel kicked his ass, bought him in just so he could kick his ass again. And it's hilarious because the whole time Daniel's talking crap. And just absolutely just kicking the, you know, Mike's mouth ass.
Yeah. A guy that always drove me nuts was the poker brat, Phil Hellmuth.
Really?
Yeah. Like every time he was crying, like, you called me with that? How could you call me with that? And it's like.
It's called fucking poker, dude.
Yeah. You're going
to
lose.
He's one of those dudes that I love to watch clips of. You know, I'll come across, you know, just the mouth fucking. You know, compilation video or something like that. And usually it's the same nine people that he's constantly pissing off at anyway.
Yeah.
But I couldn't imagine what it'd be like sitting there with him for 8-9 hours.
Oh, yeah.
You know, playing a game.
The funny,
like that would.
The funniest thing is even the announcers would shit on him. And the one I'm thinking about, I guess the announcers were fairly close because this was like a made-for-TV thing. I don't think this was like the World Poker Tournament. This was like a CBS or ABC thing. And the whole time the announcers were just talking shit about him. It's like, I don't believe he did that. And then he'd return, oh, yeah, let's see you do it. It's like, okay, we'll trade. And so at one point in time, the announcer actually traded positions with him.
The announcer actually got up, went down to the table, sat down at the table to play, and the mouth got up to go sit and announce and call the plays and everything, and the guy started winning. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Where the fuck did that happen? That's
that was on, I think it was the NBC Midnight Poker thing or whatever it was.
And
it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it was like 15 plus years ago.
Oh, yeah. It was when John and I still lived at the condo back in the day. But, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Wow, fuck. I'm surprised I don't remember that. That was back.
Yeah, it was. That's poker. What it was called. It was Poker After Dark. It was.
I was going to say, it had
NBC.
To be Poker After Dark.
Yeah.
So, do you guys know what deep fakes are?
Nope.
So deep fakes are. So
it
deep fakes
scares the shit out of me.
So for example, deep fakes, they can put like somebody else's face on another person's body.
Oh, okay,
they can make you sound similar. So somebody did probably one of the coolest deep fakes ever. So basically, they took Nixon reading about the Apollo program, and so anybody who knows about that the particular time, I don't have the dates on the top of my head, my apologies, but he had two speeches. If the Apollo program, if them landing on the moon failed. And the event of a moon disaster, and one when they exceeded. Somebody actually made a deep fake where he's reading the disaster, his disaster speech, which is, it's really cool. I mean, you find, because, you know, this is something you read and you hear about, but actually hearing and seeing a deep fake of it is pretty amazing.
Hmm. All right, yeah, I'd never heard that term.
Yeah, those things are, a lot of the times, it's very indicative of the internet in general, because when used for good can be the greatest thing that ever existed. Because some of those things are fucking hilarious, but then you can just see the evil potential in, like, the, oh, I'm not going to be able to believe, you know, my eyeballs in another 5 years, apparently.
I gotcha.
So I don't believe anything I generally see on the internet. The only thing I believe that I see on the internet is one of my favorite drummers. I'm not a big fan of the band, but Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters seems to be a hilarious guy. Like, the whole Foo Fighters band, I've never quite gotten the music, but the whole band just seems hilariously entertaining.
There's like maybe a couple of good songs by them.
My problem is I just haven't had time to really get into their music. Like, if I actually try to get into music, I actually try to sit down and just listen to it. Because otherwise, I'm like, you know, doing dishes and listening to music, working and doing the dishes.
If I ever sit down and actually just listen to the music, I start listening to the lyrics. And once I start listening to the lyrics, then I'm back on the whole thing of this is like bullshit written crap. I mean, hands off to Tom Petty for being one of the greatest songwriters out there. Elton John being another great songwriter.
Dolly Parton.
But yeah, there's a few that I go on listing, but there, I mean, how many shit and idiotic songwriters are out there is mind-boggling.
Usually, for me, this is when
what does it mean to be happy, like a room without a roof. What does that mean, John?
That would make me fucking pissed.
Exactly. Okay. See, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, I can list song after song after song.
Like, usually for me, it's anything pop or rap past a certain age. Like, newer rap, I don't get because it's all about monies and hoes. And it's just like, okay, none of that would make me happy. And the pop's just ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, if I sit down and actually listen to lyrics of a song, you know, like, I probably am just going to get annoyed and not like that song anymore. I mean, like, literally, like, if I listen to Queen, I mean, like, there's a lot of great lyrics in there. If I listen to, you know, there's a lot of great songwriters, but there's a lot of shitty, dumbass songwriters. And also, I got to say, there are
Bicycle?
About 5 or 6 Tom Petty songs that are really stupid. But even Bicycle, I mean, like, literally, that was, like, one line that they just did over and over again. But, I mean, it's, like, it's not that bad of a song compared to some of these other ones. Like go look up, what is it? It's Standing on a Dance Floor All Alone or something like that. That's a country song. And it's literally about this guy, like, bitching and whining that some chick that he was going to dance with, her friends came and took off with her. I mean, dear God, the amount of whining that dude did. Like, she needs to buy all of her friends drinks for saving her ass from him.
To get back to Taylor Hawkins real quick, I've heard people describe him as a human metronome, which absolutely made me laugh when I heard it. Okay, you're gonna say that. I say, like, Natalie Imbruglia has a song about, was it being naked, ooh, lying on the floor?
Who?
She was a hit for a hiccup in America. She's an Australian star.
Okay. I know the song, though. I think I remember hearing something.
I think she's
like
a ripoff of somebody else. Dido's song that Eminem made Stan out of is another one of those. It's like, yeah, okay. It's actually, there's a bunch of Kiss songs, but since I'm kind of a Kiss fan, and I think I could see.
But you see what I'm saying, though. If you actually sit there and listen to the song, you're going to start analyzing the lyrics.
Hold on.
And I'm just saying that's just a bad idea.
I definitely get what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, you know, I tend to go more towards the folk rock kind of stuff if I'm just going to sit there and listen to lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm kind of sort of tuning out or vibing on something that I dug when I was younger, yeah, I'm a Kiss fan. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
shit, fucking rock and roll song I ever played on the drum.
Like, I don't know, like, one of my favorite songs by Kiss, I still think it's ridiculous, even though the lyrics aren't stupid crazy, but if you take I Was Made for Loving You, It actually has in the lyrics, yeah, do, 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 do. And it's like, you know, the first, it's like 1, 2, 3. It's the first 4 actual, like, stanzas or lines. And it says, tonight I want to give it all to you in the darkness. There's so much I want to do. And tonight I want to lay it at your feet because, girl, I was made for loving you. I mean, it's just a bad pickup line.
Well,
of course, it's Kiss. So that actually fits.
So at the restaurant I'm at, they stick Pandora.
You can tell what they're trying to serve when they're making the song. Like, all right, this is about the music, and we're just throwing some lyrics to get us to the end.
Well, there you go.
You know, versus, so, this is about the lyrics, and I don't even need to, like, play anything hardly.
So perfect example, Shine On You Crazy Diamond. Like, 95% of that song is just instrumental.
I actually like the lyrics, but, oddly enough.
But I said this to somebody recently because we have Pandora on a loop at work a lot, and we'll just switch the stations. And there was a young kid, about 22, working, and I was just kind of, like, making fun of one of the songs, and he starts laughing at me, and I'm like, no, dude, like, that's, like, the whole thing is they're just making sounds. And I said, 80% of pop songs... 80% of the song is just sounds and noises. They're not actually saying words. It's bum, bum, ba, whatever the fuck they're going to do. But, you know, it's, like, not actually a word.
they're just making sounds out of their blowhole.
Yeah, exactly. And he starts busting up laughing. And he comes up to me, like, a week later, and he goes, you're right. Like, most of these songs literally are them just making vocal noises. They're not actually saying anything.
Oh, God, what was it? There's an artist. They never had a big hit until one of their songs had the, like, the...
Mm-bop, mm-bop.
No, oh. Did something. There was a section that went, like, you know, like...
Brian has a crush on the Hanson girls.
He loves.
Say what you will, but the good pop song.
He really loves the female drummer in Hanson. God, there's an ancient joke.
God, they all have kids now. How old do you feel?
Oh, God.
Well, considering I remember the 80s and some of the people I've had conversations with on a somewhat frequent basis were, you know, that they don't. Like Ronald Reagan was just, an old guy.
He was. He was old when he was even a governor.
This is true.
I mean, Jesus.
You know, like far as the pop song, had they had like the, I forgot the exact, they go the do-do-do-do, I Was Made for Loving You has okay. the...
There's a lot of songs that I'm saying that, like, they have the do-do-do-do-do, whatever.
It's filler. It's like when a comedian goes, how's everybody going? They just don't have a lot of crap to talk about.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it's not like that was anything necessarily new, not to defend shitty music and all, but, there was the doo-wop age.
Yeah.
And then also the, 50s, just general pop music was a lot of that. I'm not going to think of it. Well, there was the skiffle, it was all made for dancing.
But that was
the prime directive of the song.
But let's go way back.
Hold on.
Scat.
I want to say, but that was actually part of doo-wop. Was that doo-wop? That was actually part of the music. Pop songs generally is just pop is generally generic crap. That they'll do whatever they can to get a hit versus doo-wop. Actually, that was part of the entry.
I can always tell intent when I'm listening to a song. what I mean? All right, was this meant to be about the music and then have this sort of handful of lyrics to imply a theme? Is this about the lyrics? Is it about the poetry, the simile, the metaphor? Is it just kind of black and white? Hey, this is how I feel. I can do that math. And then there's the math of, oh, this person just figured out a sound that people are into, had somebody produce the shit out of it, and mumbled some stuff along with it.
Like some, what was it, trance music, house music? There's one of those techno music that's literally, I'm pretty sure just some drunk dude somewhere or some high dude making weird sounds.
But if we go back, I mean,
that music's made for drugs.
There was a big thing in the 1930s and 40s in swing music called scat. And that was a lot of them just doing doo-blah, whatever. It's hard for me to do. I haven't heard any of it in a long time, but that was a full-on swing style of singing. And there were guys that were really good at it, and there was people that really sucked it. And it's actually spelled S-C-A-T, not K-A-T.
Like Scatman Crothers.
But not to be confused with the scat that you find from shit of animals.
So if you guys aren't familiar with it, one of the most famous guys at it is Cab Calloway.
Yeah.
A lot of his songs.
Yeah, Cab Calloway, Louis Armstrong.
Yeah,
I would say Cab, from what I've listened to, I'd say more Cab Calloway, because almost all the songs I've heard have something in there.
But the difference between what I'm talking about, where they're just filling in a couple minutes of a song versus them intentionally doing it for 4 to 5 minutes.
Well, it was basically the lack of an instrument and them using their voice to fill in. That sort of musical feeling, that jazz kind of a feeling, because that was all about the improvisation. What was not being played as much as what was being played. Have to get into the fucking philosophy of jazz, but I liken that more to hip hop. In as much as, like you said, some was good, some was bad. Yeah. Some of it is just like older generations don't understand the appeal of even older hip hop. Let alone the new shit that I don't even get anymore.
Yeah.
The
aforementioned mumble rap, but really the idea that somebody is using their voice to pull off stuff that you can't do in a way that you're never going to be able to do it. It's impressive in the sort of magic trick of it all, but also the using your voice as the instrument part. Yeah.
See, this is, I agree. Versus you talk, even mumble rap to some degree it's not necessarily, I'm assuming some of it's not mass produced. It's the spirit of the moment. It's what it's kind of what the song calls for. It needed something to add to it. Now, where you're talking about scat, you're talking about, some sort of vocal noise versus pop, which is traditionally just baked over crap that in theory is going to make a lot of money because people buy pop. If you don't look, if you don't believe me, look, 90s, 80s, 60s, they're full of pop songs that were shit.
Well, you know, let's just throw that up here. So even if we go back to, let's say, the 50s, there's a lot of pop songs that are classics now that we still like. Like there's quite a few Beach Boys songs. There's even a few Elvis Presley songs that would be considered pop.
All of the early Beatles.
Were Beach Boys considered pop?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Well, I guess the only difference now is the fact back then pop, you still had to have some sort of ability to do it, because making a good pop song is still not easy. But versus nowadays, when you can auto-tune, make random lyrics, making music to now, in my opinion, is it seems not to have the skill. Like if you take a look at the Beatles or Beach Boys, they had skill. Versus you take a look at some of these people, there's no real skill.
There's a lot of people that would argue with you over whether or not the Beach Boys and the Beatles had actual instrumental skill.
They could sing, and
that's a whole can of worms, John.
They could sing. Yeah, plus they had the ability
to bands back in the day. Matter of fact, case in point, I exhibit A, Sam the Sham and the fucking Sparrows.
Yes. Yeah.
Sam the Sham.
Badass.
Was called Sam the Sham because he couldn't even fucking play the piano that he was pretending to play.
Yeah. But it was
in the name.
Yeah.
But the Beach Boys actually had the ability to vocally harmonize.
Yeah, but I mean, even still, like, you look at Little Red Riding Hood, that is a badass song. I mean,
fuck yeah.
And plus, the Beatles.
It's a song that we're attached to because, you know, we were from that era. Listen, we all three have to understand there's like 50% of our conversation that's just old guy talking.
Yeah.
These kids today, we're doing a bit of these kids today shit.
Well, no, I'd say yes and no. I mean, if you're going to talk about like the Beatles, they had like John Lennon, who I always thought was a piece of shit, but he was a fairly amazing musician. Versus today, I don't necessarily think it's as much about musicianship versus computers. Like for example, take the Foo Fighters. I watched a documentary of where they literally did everything on tape. So they actually had to practice. They had to play instead of doing what you do nowadays. You do six sessions or multiple, take the best bits out of everything, and you have some sort of conglomeration of music, which would never have been made before.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I like older music, because, you know, you could tell the screw ups. Or if you see them in concert, you're not upset or the fact that, hey, they didn't play this right, because look at the Grateful Dead. They never played a single song the same way ever.
No.
Yeah. I think there's also a little bit here of making it look easier than it is. You know what I mean? There's an element of like, all right, we're a little bit older than who this music is made for, and there's always going to be the generation after that sort of, to borrow a phrase, bucks the system into a different style of music. Like, I'm not going to listen to this, and whatever the next new thing is will be my thing because I can't be a part of the other thing. And so it sort of evolves in this weird way sometimes. But there's also, I mean, again, like we couldn't do what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been playing drums forever, although I haven't practiced in quite some time. I'm not going to pick up in 6 months and be a studio musician, even for, you know, something where it's just a very repetitive beat.
I guarantee
it is harder than it looks.
I bet you could be the girl from the White Stripes, at least from all, according to all the drummers I know.
Shit, you know what? You know what, bro? I couldn't.
Hey, I'm joking. I'm joking mainly because everybody I know who's even remotely ever played drums says, "Oh, the chick from the White Stripes is bad," until you realize, hey, she's holding a beat. That's not that hard, easy.
You know, the thing I gotta say.
Also, no. She, even if she's not holding the beat, even when she's off time, which she is, even in recordings, which it's intentional. You know what I mean? See, Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens, depending on if you want to be an asshole about it. Has one of my favorite quotes, and I'm going to butcher it, but something to the effect of, first understand all the rules, and then, shit, understand all of the facts and then distort them at your leisure.
Oh yeah, I get.
That's how I've always felt about music. Like, understand all of the rules and then fuck around with all of those rules. That's what the Beatles did back in the day. They knew music, and then they sat there and said, "How do we play with this formula?" You know, but so I guess those are the guys that I respect, is ones who understood where music comes from, you know, and not just like hearing something and saying, "Oh, I can do that on GarageBand."
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people, and the White Stripes will come on, and it's always Seven Nation Army. Nobody really knows anything else besides that, honestly.
That's actually totally true.
And, you know, it comes on, and, you know, there's people, like, I'll see that are, you know, like, weren't even born when the song came out or even thought of when the song came out, and I'll throw at them, "That's pretty good for just two people, huh?" And they'll look at me and go, "What?" I said, "You know, that's just Jack White and his sister." And they'll just get blown away by that. And I'm like, you know, Jack White could actually play every instrument that he ever used in his songs, even the drums. And that's who taught his sister.
Sure. I don't think that's actually his sister.
Well, yeah, it's just not his sister. It's his ex-wife.
Or whatever. Anyways, I just thought it was his sister.
I do want to say something, though. As far as pop songs, it's really hard to make something that's catchy. Like Seven Nation Army, you know, the dun, 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 dun. To get anything that catchy that stays in your mind is not easy to do.
No, and that's you know, it's a great song. There's quite a few other ones that I like that he does. But, you know, like I was playing Seven Nation Army while I was warming up a sound system, and I just remember one of the sound guys like throwing out, "Oh, it's just going to be low end and all this stuff." And I'm like, you know, actually, this is actually a really good song. Not the best for, you know, warming up a sound system just to test everything. But, you know, it's just a fun song to throw on while I'm tweaking a few things. But, you know, I'm like, honestly, for somebody who knows music as well as Jack White, I think it's a really well done song at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know,
it's well, he is going for something real specific, and that thing that he's going for, he fucking nails it.
Yeah.
I honestly, the White Stripes, even Jack White, isn't necessarily my flavor, but the dude's super talented. I guess that's the only thing I'd say is about music, but it's always been the case, especially if you look like 80s hair metal. There's tons of really shitty bands. And I'd like to hope that the good musicians make it. And I think that that's historically been true. Like, if you look at the pop princesses, if you take a look like Britney Spears Michael versus... Jackson, well, Britney if you Spears. Take a look at Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera,
okay.
Christina Aguilera has an amazing vocal talent. Britney Spears, she sounds the same in every record. So you look at one actually has a lot of hits, continues to make records. The other one doesn't, you know, so I'd like to believe that eventually.
Well, I mean, shit, back in the day, I mean, a lot of people consider like the 60s and the 70s sort of the heyday for just amazing music in general, because fuck, you had soul, the beginnings of R&B, the British Invasion, the ballsy three chord rock, you know what I mean?
Black Sabbath.
Into punk rock. I mean, all of these things, the birth of heavy metal and hard rock. And how many of those things are one-hit wonders is fucking remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, people that just came on, they were famous for 5 fucking seconds, you know, because, I mean, how many of those people, somebody else wrote the song? How many people, John Lennon and Paul McCartney wrote a song and then just said, "Hey, bro, here, have this song." And, like, made some fucking band famous. David Bowie did the same thing.
Charles Michael Manson, Google too.
Would not be a fucking band without David Bowie.
Who wouldn't?
Mata Hoople. Nobody knows that fucking band. That's a terrible example.
I was going to say, that's not what I'm familiar with. But you just had a great example. Look at David Bowie. Now, I know he's not everybody's particular flavor, but the dude was super talented. He has multiple albums that are not only a cult hit, but anybody who's even remote fan will say, "Oh, yeah, I like this one, then this one." And he has distinct styles.
Do you know the song "All the Young Dudes"?
I've probably heard it. I've heard most of his songs over the years.
The title rings a bell. Anyway, that was the David Bowie song that he wrote and gave to that band and made that song. Oh, it was the show or movie. Never mind, forget about it.
I was gonna say I've heard my sister's a big Bowie guy girl, so I've heard a lot of his stuff, but I'm not really good with titles. Like, it's one of those things I actually have to hear the song to know, to see if I actually know it or not, to be honest.
Yeah, well, he did actually a recording of it himself and released it, but years after it was sort of famous with Mötley Crüe.
Well, the thing I like about Bowie is, and it's the same thing I like about, like, Pink and Christina Aguilera and all these other people, is they have albums that are completely different from each other, which...
Yeah, conceptual.
I'd say it's not easy to do because you risk your career. Like, if you take Pink, the best one I can understand is you take a look at her first commercial album, which was kind of rap-ish, you know, R&B, and you take a look at her next one after that was Misunderstood. It's a completely set... Those two albums are 180 degrees different. Or if you take a look at, I think, Christina Aguilera's Dirty record, it's different from everything else she did up to that point. And that's pretty brave when you basically... You're changing your sound and everything that the audience you already made has liked, versus if you take Taylor Swift, who I'm not personally not a big fan of, but that's just me. She's always had the same, she says she was country originally, but her music to me has never really changed that much. I mean, a lot of her big hits are, she's talking shit about her boyfriends, but you know, versus somebody who just takes an album and just says, you know, I'm just going to do my thing and see what comes up. You know, I like that.
But, now, you're bringing up Taylor Swift, and I'm pretty sure she did this on Home Alone.
By the way, I don't know enough about Taylor Swift to say if she's talented or not. I'm assuming if she's been around this long, she's at least hell of a songwriter. I am curious how she would be song-wise versus, say, somebody like Dolly Parton, who's considered one of the greatest female songwriters in history.
Yeah. Totally thought of somebody else, but I was thinking about, you know, like the Miley Cyrus chick. That's who I got confused with Taylor Swift. They're all this, you know, all of them kind of came out the same time. They're all like the same, but her Jolene, though,
it's amazing,
is way better than anything she's ever done.
See, this is,
and even Parton joined her up on that one, and that was really good song.
This is the thing that kind of,
I would argue that she's not a great singer. And an amazing performer, you know, a lot of people just start getting mad initially, which usually is because they're not writing the songs. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, this is just a pop song that was written and making this person famous. And it doesn't have the singer songwriter earned it sort of feeling to it. You know, it feels like you could have just picked out any person from a singing studio and done that to her.
There's a Simpson episode about that. But I do want to say something, though. If it sounds like I'm shitting on anybody, I don't mean it to be. I mean, this is really kind of quibbling because I'm not going to crap on anybody for getting a payday. I mean, whether they're a pop princess who's basically just singing around, it's still not an easy gig. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, far as somebody who'd like to think he's at least somewhat creative, I'm more into people who either experiment, who can tell who obvious talents, like Miley Cyrus. I'm not, you know, she's way after me. But you can see she's talented. She has, and like her version of Jolene, if you take a look on YouTube, there's a version of Jolene. She's wearing some sort of like white shirt. And her raspiness of her voice fits that song like a fucking T.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, they're one of the radio jockeys I remember, and I just really liked what he said about, and he was speaking about the Animals and their version of House of the Rising Sun. And he says, you know, there are just some songs out there that somebody comes along and does it, and it becomes the definitive version of that song. And for me, that's the Animals, House of the Rising. So we talked about this a while back, but you know, I got to throw in Miley Cyrus's Jolene as well in there. Cause I mean,
we were talking about that a few weeks ago, but that replaced the original for me.
Yeah. But there's, you know, there's always somebody out there who can do it and do it well.
I would say far as the Jolene goes, I think what that is I think that's modern tastes changing versus, I think if you were into the style of country Dolly Parton sung, I think you would actually like it, even though I actually think Miley Cyrus's version is better just because I like the way she performs it.
Well, I like Jolene from Miley, from Dolly Parton. I liked it. And then I heard Miley Cyrus's and I'm like, that one is really amazing.
I'll be honest. I think it's hands down better. Just because
I'd rather look at the Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You.
Yeah. You know, Dolly Parton didn't.
All the prompts in the world about Dolly Parton, you know.
What, do you know, according to what I read, Dolly Parton didn't let Elvis sing that song? I thought it was pretty.
Yeah, who brought that up to me recently?
Probably him. So,
Hold on. I'm trying to find. So, take a look. If you go to YouTube, type in Miley Cyrus, the Backyard Sessions.
Jolene.
That's the version that I really dig.
Yeah. So. You know, because we did the movie show for so long, I really wasn't into movies or even really had an interest in watching very many. But, you know, the other day, I just kind of was like, I'm in just a shitty movie mood. So I watched the new Iron Sky. You seen that one, John?
The second one?
Yeah.
No. All I know is we got a lot of shit on YouTube for that.
For the Iron Sky?
Yeah, because some of the comments were funny. It's like, come on.
But so I watched that one, and then I was kind of scrolling around and watched a couple horror films. But, you know, I was kind of like, don't really want to watch it. I even watched the new Abrams one about World War II, The Overlords. I think it's a prime one.
Okay, I was going to watch that.
Yeah, so I watched that one. But you know what movie, like, really took me by surprise, and I really enjoyed the shit out of this movie, and it was over 2 hours long?
Please be The Irishman.
No. You know what? We are going to come back to this.
I was hoping just because I
watched that.
Because I figured if you liked it.
I haven't seen it. Don't say anything.
Oh, no, I'm coming back to that one, Ryan. Don't you worry.
So how
come back
about
to it next week. I'll watch it in the meantime.
So the one that took me by surprise, yeah, I'll give you a week, Ryan, was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
I've seen a bunch of clips of it. It was hilarious from what I saw.
I've had a buddy that's been begging me to fucking watch that.
Dude, watch that damn movie. I almost texted you a couple days ago and told you to watch that one so we could talk about it today. That movie, like, that was a refreshing movie. I'm just going to throw that out there. Since Ryan hasn't seen it yet and he's been having somebody bug him, I'm going to hold back a little bit.
So it's an actual full-length movie?
Yeah.
But it's 133 minutes. Wow.
Yeah, it's just over 2 hours. There's six short films in it. Man, that was a really refreshing movie. Like, that one actually made me want to start watching movies again. And both of you guys know that's not something that I say lightly.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, to want to watch movies at this point, like, I can't watch any drama movies anymore just because I just, like, I look for fun movies, and this is one I've seen some clips of, and it made me laugh. There's a scene where he's in a bar. He's not allowed to bring in his guns. Somebody shows his guns, and so he kicks the table and shoots somebody.
You're just ruining the movie for Ryan.
Well, I don't care.
So,
well, that's
the first story. There's six different ones in there. But no, I actually really enjoyed that one. I kind of enjoy the fact that they have, you know, different.
Oh, now I know why you liked it. I forgot. It's a Coen Brothers.
Okay,
that's why.
But now, Ryan, do you know who?
I love the Coen Brothers.
Ryan, do you know who actually did this Irishman movie?
Yes.
Who directed it?
Yeah.
It's James's arch nemesis.
With the fucking cast, I'm pretty sure that was Scorsese.
Yeah. So just so you have a fair idea of what you're walking into.
But
when he does fucking mob movies, I tend to listen.
But he's a Scorsese fan. On the other hand, have spent the 20 years I've known you saying he couldn't direct his way out of a wet paper bag.
And then I just finally just said he's a shit hack.
You know what? I was on the same fucking boat also, and then he did The Departed. And there's not a fucking thing wrong with that movie at all.
Hold on. Time out. Can we skip the Departed conversation?
Yeah, I'm backing away from the mic right now, John, if you haven't noticed.
So I was going to say, before I was rudely interrupted, because I don't want to hear that conversation for 20th time. If you don't know the Coen brothers, they did stuff like Fargo, Oh Brother, We're Out There, No Country for Old Men. So you know who they are. If you're like, oh, I don't know who they are.
Yeah, they've got one of the best batting averages of any director.
Yeah.
I did hear a rumor. I don't know how much is true. I did hear was that they might make a new Matrix set of movies with the Wachowskis.
Okay.
They dropped out of limelight and haven't done any movies. I really like Speedway Racer. I like the first Matrix movies. Not a big fan of the second or third one personally, but I'm kind of excited to see them directing movies again.
Yeah.
Can we agree that, and I don't know if you would, my position on the Matrix second and third is ahead of its time.
Honestly,
today's fucking CGI and those movies would have been amazing.
My thing with The Matrix was, I think, and this is my personal opinion, it's the second or third one just seemed rushed too much to me.
I thought conceptually it was solid. I just thought it was just they didn't have the technology to go where they wanted to go.
I'll actually disagree. I think they were in the perfect moment of time. I think if they did it now, I don't think it would be as revolutionary as it was.
I don't think movies would be where they are now without it.
The concept.
Well, even the concept, I think if it was now, I kind of think it would be just another, I think it might have been a half-baked movie.
No. What I'm saying is you take conceptually those movies then at that time and you give them 2019 CGI. That's what killed those movies. Everybody fucking, it turned into a cartoon all of a sudden.
Yeah, there were parts that are pretty cartoony.
But aside from that, the story, I believe, is one of the more solid fucking trilogy stories ever.
The concept of the story, I think it was good. But I think if you did the same movie in 2019, I don't think it would be as good. Matter of fact, I think it might have been passed over.
I think that you're saying that because of what The Matrix did. The Matrix introduced, again, that whole concept. Which, if nobody knew about, because those movies didn't exist then, they'd be finding out about now because of that movie.
More of the fact, I think The Matrix was a product of its time. And I think if you made it now, it would be a product out of time. I just don't think it would be good. Because if you take a look at all the movies that are out now and the way... The Matrix wasn't a guaranteed smash hit. And nowadays, if you take a look what's happening, everything's going to be a smash hit. I don't think it would be as good because it may not have gotten the theater reception, which I actually think it needed. I think if you put it on Netflix and released it today, I don't think it would be as big. I think the reason why it was so big, because not only was it so revolutionary and the story actually had some meat behind it, but because you actually had to go to the theater and see it. So you still had that communal experience, which you don't get a lot nowadays, especially now that everybody does big tentpole movies, a.k.a. Disney. But my opinion.
I think what you have today, how those movies would be different with the technology that's available today, the concept would hold up at any time. Because it is still a mind-blowing fucking thing, you know what I mean? If you're sort of unaware of the theory of the singularity, you know what I mean? That we're living in a simulation and all of that. And,
oh, shit.
You know, them sort of adding the Jesus sort of fucking side to it of everything.
But
a lot of movies have done that. Star Wars basically made a fucking $10 billion on it.
I forgot they did Jupiter Ascending. That was the one with Channing.
That's the one.
Channing Tatum.
I was thinking they did like Atlas Shrugged or something.
No, that I don't remember Jupiter Ascending getting a really good reception. But I don't remember. I remember wanting to be kind of want to see it. Oh, and they also did Sense8, which was that weird TV show we did in Real Flicks.
Yeah. I like that one.
I'm just excited to see them. I'm excited to see any filmmaker, whether I like them or not, kind of doing their thing. Because I'd like to see. I would like to see people succeeding, just because nowadays with everything being big, you know, Marvel movies.
Big Marvel movies, or if you want actually good movies, you go to Netflix, Amazon, or Hulu, or something like that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, lately, for whatever reason, well, I know the exact reason, I've been getting back into what probably Martin Scorsese would refer to as cinema. All this shit talking. I don't know if were you guys aware of that whole thing. People were like upset at him that he called the Marvel movies not cinema.
Which, by the way, is kind of Tarantino's thing about digital, which I still kind of agree with. So no,
I was gonna say I know what he means. Yeah. You know, I don't understand why everybody's all weird about it.
I don't either.
Because honestly, it's probably because he's an old white guy.
Well, no, because people love fucking Iron Man movies, and they're like, how dare you not call that good cinema? And he's like, no, it's not cinema. It's not, you know, like with movies about, you know, life and the human experience, and, you know, you're being shown flashing colors, and I know what he means, like I said, but it's the I've same... been trying to watch, you know, more like what I would refer to as cinema.
The problem is if you take a look at it before Marvel movies, there were the Transformers movies. There's always been these movies that it's basically, it's not an experience. They're made for 12-year-old boys. And,
the summer blockbuster has always been a thing, but, you know, all of a sudden the only thing popular is summer blockbusters all of a sudden. It's like a summer all year long.
Oh, by the way, The Witcher is coming out this month, which is something I'm looking forward to.
Mm. By the way, have you guys been watching The Mandalorian?
Yes.
No, it's on my list of things, but I haven't had time.
Yep.
I'm surprised how much I like that show.
Me too.
By the way, if I see another...
I'm really not expecting to like that show.
If I see another fucking Baby Yoda meme on Facebook, Twitter...
Bro, that's why I thought I wasn't going to like that show.
You're on Facebook and Twitter, Ryan?
No, but I can't fucking... You can't stop seeing Baby Yoda memes. It's ridiculous.
I have not seen one Baby Yoda meme.
Oh, dude, it's...
I don't want to see Baby Yoda.
I have not seen one Baby Yoda meme, and I don't care to see another baby, any of them.
I want to see it, but I've heard great things about it. The old guy loves it. It's one of those things that I just don't have a lot of time to watch content these days, so I'm on a list.
The only thing I want to say about all that, man, Gina Carano still cannot act very well.
Oh, shit, she's in this? Oh, you're right. This is the one that everybody was saying, this is going to this is going to help her career.
I hope it does, but, man, she just doesn't get into the roles well enough.
Well, I think, honestly, I think she kind of has the same issue that Ronda Rousey does a little bit. And it's not the fact that I don't think she can act. It's the fact she doesn't have a range.
Yeah.
She has one emotion, pissed off. Because, if you take a look...
Never really played, like, a different character.
Yeah.
You're Gina Carano. We need a Gina Carano type in this role.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
If you take a look, like, Michael Ironside, or if you take a look at... Michael Ironside plays the same role. If you look at Christopher Lambert from the Highlander movies, most of his movies are the same basic character. Yeah. And... I don't think that she, at least what's been shown, she doesn't have the range. And I don't necessarily think that it's her fault that's a bad actor. It may be the fact it was just the role picked for her or the director who doesn't know how to bring the best out of her.
I don't know. I think it was just not a very...
it's probably the writing, honestly.
I really
think that the role called for a Gina Carano type, and they had Gina Carano available.
Does she play a Mandalorian?
She wasn't previously committed.
Bounty hunter.
Interesting.
But,
hold on. Credit where credit's fucking due. Chick does some goddamn amazing stuff.
She does. She really does. Yeah. She still has good chops.
She really is like balls to the wall. She's a fucking tough gal.
Yeah. Yeah, but so I mean, I really like that show. I think John would like it if he just sat down and turned it on.
Actually, has time.
I just sat down and turned it on.
It is worth your time, though.
I pretty much go home, eat dinner, and go to bed. I have to be up super early in the morning for work.
No, I get that.
And plus the fact lately I've been playing a new game, so any free time I've been playing The Outer Worlds. Which is a pretty fun game.
Yeah, dude, I've been playing the fucking balls off that game lately.
I really dug it. I'm kind of... It's weird because they don't... So it takes place in outer space. There's not a lot of different planets that I was expecting. But damn, they unlike, say, like Mass Effect, where you're just going to one spot in a planet. There's like... Some of these things have like three or four little landing ports that aren't exactly connected. It's pretty cool. I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, and I'm really enjoying it too. It's the same guys that did Fallout New Vegas, Obsidian is released it.
No, they're fun. So I
nice
totally
to see Obsidian fucking throwing games out. But yeah, really, really fucking fun game. There's enough to explore. I don't know if you ever played No Man's Sky.
No.
Or familiar with it at all.
It's
a procedurally generated space exploration game where you can go to, I mean, literally, I think 100 million planets. Now, they obviously vary in very slight ways, probably like 200, 300 variations, and then any combination thereof, you know what I mean, gets you to that exponential fucking number. But you can go to any place on these planets and to the front side or the back side or the, you know, top or the bottom. Doesn't matter. It almost is too much. You know, it's, you get lost in the vastness of what's going on. So I almost like that there is a limited amount of space on each planet. Like, I prefer that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I mean, the only thing I just, because this game's only, allegedly has only 40 hours of gameplay, which to me is kind of a bummer.
I'm on my second playthrough, but it's actually worth a second playthrough.
That was my goal at some point. Also, Star Wars Jedi Fallen looks pretty fun. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Okay, so that one, I've got mixed feelings on that one. I really fucking enjoyed it. It was a fun game. It told an amazing story.
I doubt there's any replayability.
But not at all. Like, I don't know if you have Game Pass. It'd be the perfect game to Game Pass.
It's one of those.
If it comes out on there,
it would be one of those for me that if I'm in GameStop and it's there for $30, I'll do it. It wasn't going to be one I was going to buy just because it didn't. It has the feeling of a game I might enjoy, but not a lot of replayability.
I mean, they hit my single player fucking Star Wars fix, but it was very linear. You're being told a very specific story. There wasn't the variation possibility with, you know, like Knights of the Old Republic, stuff like that.
Most Star Wars games, minus both KOTORs, have zero replayability for me. I'll play it once, and I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm not having fun. I can
see that's why. I mean, if there's a new Star Wars game and it's not really a KOTOR, I don't really care.
I actually wanna. I have my KOTOR discs somewhere at home. I wanna play the second one again.
I've played them both within the last year.
Yeah, I played the first one a few months ago, but yeah, I mean.
Because I have almost every single game I've ever bought.
Yeah, I really like the can't remember the name of the segment other than KOTOR 2.
Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Yeah.
That's pretty much.
I thought it was like Sith Lords or something like that.
Not that I remember.
Sith Lords.
Yeah, okay. Anyways.
Everybody called it KOTOR 2.
Yeah.
Come on.
But yeah, I mean, I love the shit out of that game.
Yeah, and the whole thing, the whole combat thing being very fucking D&D, you know, turn-based combat style, it doesn't fucking bother me a bit because that game is amazing.
That's the thing. I always thought that it would bother the shit out of me, but, you know, it really doesn't.
Nope. Now, this one, the combat is obviously way more dynamic and meant to be so, but that's the fun part of the game. It's very reminiscent of, I don't know if you guys ever played like Uncharted series or like the Tomb Raider, sort of Assassin's Creed, a lot of like puzzle solving gets from this side of the base to the other.
Well, the question on this very superfluous route. What version of Tomb Raider? Because there's Tomb Raider where that's all you're doing is solving puzzles and it pisses me off versus the newer one that has puzzles, but they're either not hard or there's other ways around it.
They're not hard, usually no way around it, and quite a bit of combat in between.
But now, is it like Prince of Persia?
Oh, fuck.
Not quite.
Dude, I love the shit out of Prince of Persia.
Yeah, but those puzzles got really...
Are pretty freaking tricky and badass, though, once you got them down.
Yeah, but one of the...
Yeah, no, most of the puzzles are pretty simple, and it's just how to get from one place to another.
That's like Prince of Persia.
But again, the story is fucking great. It takes place 5 years after Anakin becomes Vader.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Yeah, like I said, it's on my list of Things to try.
Now, question, did you ever read the Darth Vader comic books, Ryan?
I did not.
Oh, I'll send you a link. Those are badass. You should read those. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a huge gap in my Star Wars, you know, canon fucking knowledge as far as that period of time, what happened after, Revenge of the Sith.
The comic books are good.
Well, the issue with the comic book knowledge, your knowledge of Star Wars is the fact Disney upended all the lore. So nobody knows it. Like, if the expanded universe has a lot of it fleshed out. The only problem is now it's legacy and it's not canon.
Right, but they do have the legacy canon still listed there, you know.
Yeah, but
I think they just refer to it as the legends or something like that.
It's basically like, you know, there's Star Trek and there's J.J. Abrams Star Trek. I mean, so right now the major canon is J.J. Abrams.
Well, J.J. Abrams did a really interesting thing where it actually is the same thing that the James Bond reboot did with the Casino Royale and et cetera. Is they reverse engineered it into the beginning of the show. So none of the actual show has to change, just how they got there and the prequel portion of it changed.
Okay, question for
you. But at the end of it, it's like they end up on the Enterprise doing their 5-year mission into space, and thus begins the adventures of Star Trek.
So we're running close to the ending, and I keep hearing rumors that after the current Bond movie comes out, the next Bond will be a woman. Yay or nay?
Man, they've been fucking pulling this shit for fucking ever.
Is she going to be Jamie? Jamie Bond.
James Bond. Or a woman James Bond.
Here's,
probably when I see it.
Here's my issue is I just don't think it'll be as good, because I think you're going to have to change the character completely unless she's a woman whore.
Well, obviously you're going to have to change the name.
Jamie Bond.
I don't think, honestly, I just don't think it's going to be, and I don't think it's going to be the same. I think it's going to completely change the character. It may do good, but long run, I don't think it's going to track well. Just because if you take a look at the
I mean, look, I'm generally fucking open to it. I mean, especially for James Bond, God damn, there's enough James Bond movies. I never thought I'd say that in my life, but
yeah,
you know, if they went a completely different direction that I wasn't, you know, a fan of or something like that, I've got like 35 fucking movies to watch.
I at least think they should keep it male, but hey, I'll possibly give it a watch. I'm curious on why they don't turn it to a gay male.
I mean, hey, that'd be interesting.
Well, like I said, I like the original content, but close to the original story. So we'll see. I don't think it'll do as well as you don't have this, you know, alcoholic, sexist guy versus, because you're going to have to change the character completely. So you're going to have her a strong female.
Well, she could be alcoholic and sexist.
Yeah, I just don't. Here's the problem. Here's the issue. Is the society, will it track well with the audiences? Do the audiences want to see a strong female character who's like James Bond, and she's going to come across bitchy? Is that going to do well versus
they absolutely do. You know how well fucking stuff like Red Sparrow and Salt and Atomic Blonde, those things sold fucking great.
Yeah, but
actually, I liked all three of those movies.
But how many are like the James Bond typical archetype character? Because I don't remember Salt being like that.
They all have definitely versions of that, but they're just not playing that character. I think that character could sell, and I think they would use the name because the name alone would sell a certain amount of people versus just putting out a female spy movie. I think there definitely is a market for, and I wouldn't necessarily appreciate them using that franchise to sell it when I think it would sell just fine on its own.
Because I'm kind of curious on one, like they can't call it James Bond, so they're going to call it 007.
Sure.
Because, I mean, yeah, it could be one of those like Men in Black 3 where just the torch is being passed along to somebody else. The code name is, you know, he retires and, you know, the chick who played Money Penny takes over.
So I'm just curious on the whole thing, because depending on how you do the character, she's going to come across either, okay, she's kind of suave or bitchy or, and whether fair or not, that type of character always seems to be a fine line, because you're either going to come across as this really suave chick or every Angelina Jolie movie.
Like, no, I think there'd be a happy medium. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, the chick who played Moneypenny in the remakes, the same chick that was the Valkyrie in the Thor and Avenger movies.
Oh.
She can definitely pull off that type of character.
Now, do you think they're going to have her be kind of the suave throwback that James Bond is, or do you think they're just going to completely reinvent the wheel?
I think they're going to do the updated version the same way they did with Daniel Craig. You know, Daniel Craig is still an alcoholic, but he's definitely a different type of charming than you know, your Sean Connery and Roger Moore even.
Or George Lazenby. I'm really super curious in how this is going to play out, even if they do it.
Yeah.
Well, all you have to do is, I mean, just literally update it for the times, but you can literally do a one-to-one comparison of those two characters, and they'd be the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, sleeps with every dude because, you know, like that's how she needed to get the information or what have you. That's not going to be a problem.
Would the audience be okay with, basically, James Bond is a man whore. Would they be okay with that with a woman?
Well, the only thing that they're not, the only thing people wouldn't be okay with is the fucking curmudgeons who are like, he needs to be a man.
Yeah.
Well,
the only people that would have a problem with it. Other than that, I mean, you know, it's going to live or die in its own merits, like the Ghostbusters movie. I didn't have a problem with it being a bunch of chicks. It was just
as funny as do you know what my biggest problem with that movie was? Is they turn it to slapstick. If they played it serious like the original, I probably would have loved it because of the fact it's a Ghostbusters, but because it turned into Hollywood's typical.
It reminded me of Flubber. Remember Flubber with Robin Williams?
Yes.
Like, I fucking loved the shit out of the original Absent-Minded Professor. And it was literally played for no laugh. Like they just went for, hey, what would this guy do if he was this aloof and created something this goofy? And it didn't turn into this weird Disney fucking musical with dancing Flubber.
See, I liked Robin Williams' Flubber, but I didn't like Flubber because of Flubber. I liked Flubber because of Robin Williams was in it.
Oh, yeah, he couldn't save that movie for me.
I'm super curious in how they're going to play it. And I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, just...
Historically, it would even happen, to be honest with you.
Historically, I like stuff staying close to the original content, or, you know, like, hey, create a female spy separately. Because I'm actually surprised they didn't do that with the Bourne movies. Because they made Jeremy Renner's version, which wasn't that good. I said, why can't you make a female Bourne? That universe is so rich, I think you could do it.
Well, and especially since you have the super soldier fucking thing to back up on, it could be anybody and you can sell it.
Versus I think James Bond.
But that's my point is, you know, like I don't think that they would even necessarily do that unless it was just like a dying franchise that nobody watches anymore and they had to do something to gimmick it up.
See, I think
other than that, why wouldn't you just put out another spy movie that's a check?
Yeah, because I think James Bond, I'll be honest, I think it's going to be a hard sell. It'll probably do well, especially considering this will be first time it'll be a non-male
if
they do it.
Where have we been hearing this is going to be happening?
It's been all over for a bit. It's been a hiccup, but it's been all over. Daniel Craig,
all over, like they were going to have Idris Elba play.
Well, it really
James
started.
Bond, they said that for like 3 years.
It really started with Daniel Craig saying he basically said the next Bond needs to be a girl.
Mm.
But so I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, there starts all the speculation in the world, though. You know what I mean? How much is any studio really considering?
Well, this is true. But my thought was, if it'll do well, it's not going to be on the first one. It's going to be if there's a sequel with her. Are they going to be the Roger Moore? Are they going to be the Daniel Craig? Or is she going to be the George Lazenby? Which, you know, he was in one.
Well,
Bond.
I mean, obviously there's that. But, you know, to me, it would just be, do they continue any kind of continuity? You know, is it Daniel Craig passing it on to somebody else? You know, is there somebody in this new movie that's coming out that's going to be a setup for,
I think,
you know, her? Because Moneypenny in I want to say it was Casino Royale, like shot a guy and that's how she ended up behind the desk.
See, I personally, I think if they're going to do it, I think that would be the best way to do it, was have the ceremonial handoff. You could have Daniel Craig show up if they do sequels later on and do bits and pieces and use him as a gag if you want, or a gimmick.
Yeah.
I think if it's
either that or you rewrite the history, yeah.
Yeah, and I think if you have a separate standalone movie without that, I think you're missing context. And the only reason I'm saying that is because that's an old character that's always been male. So I say if you have a female character, it's the first time you see an actual transition that's not standalone. Only way I think it'll work. And I think if they do that and they have her not be the stereotypical James Bond, but a woman who can stand on her own without being kind of a female James Bond, I think you're going to do it. The only thing, I don't think it's going to be what people look in for Bond movies. I think that's the only thing they're going to have issues with is they have, at least in my opinion, this is a guy who's an old Bond fan, is there's such a narrow band of what is James Bond. I think that's what they're going to be fighting. Too far, and it's not James Bond. Too far another way, and it's GoldenEye.
I wouldn't want them to do it as a... I've seen these sorts of movies before where it becomes a, hey, fuck you, women can do this just as good, and we're going to make all the jokes to suggest that that's exactly what's going on here. You know, sort of a little too self-aware, you know, because they want to sort of throw the social justice warrior message to the forefront as opposed to just letting it, like everybody remember, like oh, yeah, remember when Bond was a chick? Like, that was cool. Like, just do a Bond movie. Like, that's all I hope they do is just do a Bond movie and don't address it at all.
Well, I mean,
you know, and I wonder if it would even just be, like, a one-off. Like, hey, look, we still plan to continue the series with Craig or whoever the fuck else, but we're just going to do this one as a thing to see who likes it.
Well, see, my main curiosity is how they do the personality of Bond. Because if you take a look at all the movies, the personality is pretty much very similar through all the people who have played them. Now, the curiosity is how do they transition that into a female lead is the question. Because it's either going to be Pierce Brosnan, ridiculous over the top. It's like the super female James Bond, or it'll be Salt, Atomic Blonde, etc. And that's the part.
I think it would be a lot more in line with the new Daniel Craig sort of style where just, you know, very subtly, you know, charming and seductive, you know, she can put that on. And then she can also put on the serious face when she needs to pull out the silenced Walther PPK, which she fucking better have if this happens.
Well, considering the PPK is a girl's gun.
I mean, shit, fucking 380, right? I think.
Actually, never mind. That was like a 9mm. Never mind. That was the Browning he originally had, not the PPK. Yeah, we'll see. I'm curious to see if they do it. Like I said, I still think, and we actually got to go because we're over time. I still think it's the key to this is not going to be the first movie because the first one will make money, guaranteed. The question is if they make a sequel. And I think that's going to be the telltale sign if it's good or at least good enough to make another one with a female lead. Because I think
the telltale sign if it's good or not is if it's good.
Come on, we've both seen movies that didn't deserve a sequel and they got sequels. That's
my point. You know what I mean? If they have a sequel, I'm not necessarily, you know, calling that as proof that it was a good movie. If it's good, it's good.
I think
But I'll definitely watch it if it's a thing.
I think for this one it's definitely gonna be. Because I think what it's gonna be is it's gonna be it's like a beer, you know, like if you have it and you first like it and after a while the taste kind of just doesn't really suit you. I think this movie is going to be that way. It's going to be something that people are going to have to taste for a while and see if it ages well or if it fits well. I mean, the Upfront Battle is
more like sometimes you go into a bar and somebody hands you a piss water beer and you drink it and you're like, ah, fuck, that beer sucked. And you tell the bartender like, hey man, like I'm thirsty and I'm in the middle of a desert and there's nothing for 1,000 miles. Do you have anything else to drink? He's like, no, but I have this other beer that's the same as the last one.
So I don't.
And you drink it because there's nothing else.
We'll see. I mean, I we'll see what happens. I'm curious to see if they do it.
Everything has to be a fucking franchise, whether it's good or not. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
I kind of miss standalone movies to some degree.
Right? You can be both, buddy.
But hey, you know, I'm a different cat these days. You know, I enjoy goofy movies that, you know, I still like the unintentional comedies. Take a look at all the 80s action movies that are all fucking hilarious, whether they're meant to be or not. So, any final words? James, you got to have something to say.
Got to have an opinion.
Apparently he doesn't have an opinion. So, Ryan, any final words?
Negative.
So, as always, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.